Blog Talk Radio.
Take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Mana Pro Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of the Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens. My co-host is Pat Foreman, author of City Chicks, Chicken Tractor, and other great titles. Today is Thursday, May 17th, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, we welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and of course, living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by ManaPro.
ManaPro is committed to providing the best quality products that your animals deserve at a value you can appreciate. No matter the animal, no matter the product, you can be certain that ManaPro cares as much about the well-being of your flock as you do. So try one of the many poultry products offered at a retailer near you. ManaPro, nurturing life.
When you need an incubator, think Brensea, the incubation specialist. Brensea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, technology you can trust. Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Guess what? Have you been listening? When I say, if you can tune in every day at 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, you're not only will your day go by faster, but your week will go by faster as well. And lo and behold, if tomorrow is not going to be Friday already. So, again, thank you very much for tuning in. Real quick, want to thank all of the chat room chickeneers there in the chat room for joining us, as they do every day. I want to thank everybody for listening live, even if you can't actually participate in the chat room because your workplace doesn't allow it. But we still thank you also for listening live. Thanks to all the homeschoolers out there that listen to the show and incorporate the show with their daily curriculum, and the over-the-road truck drivers we hear from that listen to the show every day. And a most special thank you to the feed and seed stores, the farm centers that broadcast this show, stream it live every day in their stores for all of their listeners to enjoy and learn. We thank you all very much for that. In fact, I just checked over on iTunes earlier this morning, and this week we had bumped up in the top 25, maybe it's the top 20, twice this week already. We're number 8, and we were number 17. Number 8 and number 17. So we had two shows this week. I believe it was yesterday's show and Tuesday's show, and I'm sure Doc Brown's Monday show was up there somewhere after it was broadcast. It just dropped down a little bit, though, out of the top 20 now that we've got the other shows going. But we were in the top 25 twice this week, still there. Number 8 and number 17. So thank you very much for listening live. Always good to be there in the top podcasts and the top episodes on iTunes every week. We thank you very much for that. We've got a great show lined up for you today. First, Pat is going to be, unfortunately, in the pharmacy. Got a phone call from her this morning, and she's been called into work, so she'll be in the pharmacy, so she will not be joining us. But what makes this a great show is, in fact, probably about a looking at the calendar here, it looks like maybe about four to six times we've been either traveling on Thursday or had a conflict on Thursday when she was supposed to be on. But we are very thankful and honored that today our resident poultry scientist and professor, small flock specialist, Dr. Bridget McCray, PhD, is going to be joining us here in a few minutes. And we got a real interesting topic that that really should concern us all. Regarding the season coming up here, and it's thermoregulation. Yep, say that 10 times, thermoregulation. It's today's topic, and summer is coming, and that means heat. And so we're going to learn how your chickens keep cool, how to deal with the hot temperatures, what you can do to help them out a little bit with keeping cool, because we've always stated that heat is far more detrimental to your chickens than the cold ever will be, for those of you who choose to put an unnecessary heat lamp in your coops at night. So we'll talk about the heat issue on today's show. Again, learning how the chickens deal with that naturally with their own cooling systems, if you will. We all know that chickens don't have any sweat glands, so they don't sweat, but they do pant like a dog. And to try to keep cool, they take the dust baths, they dig down in the dirt a little bit, they sit in the shade, and we'll learn other ways. And so that they keep cool, as well as how we can help them assist in keeping cool as these summer months approach. We'll talk about vitamins and electrolytes a little bit, and some of those that we see on the market that we can mix and add to their water. And we'll talk to Dr. McCray a little bit about that today as well. Is it worth the $6.95 or the $7.95, and worth our time mixing it and giving it to them? And so New Dawn Farm Girl basically said, she put in the chat room, heat lamps are not necessary, with a big question. And I don't know where you've been, New Dawn Farm Girl. But, yep, every year for the last probably 5 years, starting in September, people start telling us, well, it's going to get down to about 38. I guess I need to go hook the heat lamp up to keep my chickens warm. And goodness gracious, you'll see those posts that I post, New Dawn Farm Girl, here this coming fall when we start getting those questions on our Facebook page and on the radio show and whatnot. So we'll talk a little bit. We'll talk a little bit about that as well. So, we got a great show today. Dr. McCray has joined us in the chat room as well. You can see you're there chatting away with everybody. And so very, very good. And perfect. Let's see what we got here. I want to say hello to everybody in the chat room real quick. Bard Rock, Dr. McCray, we got Dr. Pearl, we've got Feathers with a Z, we've got a couple of guests in there. Thanks for joining us. We've got Jackie Easter, we've got Lindsay, we've got Megan, we've got New Farm Girl, we've got Poet's Wife, we've got The Humble Historian, we've got Trident Farms. Welcome back. Haven't seen you in there in a little while. Thank you very much for coming and joining us today. A very good and interesting topic today. Reminder, and it's still kind of up in the air. I probably won't be making my final decision until later this evening, around supper time. But I would just say right now, since you're listening live, that there may not be a show tomorrow. Probably not. There may be. We may be on the road actually tomorrow during the radio show time frame. So hey, Megan, and in the chat room there. So right now, I'm just going to tell you, watch our Facebook page. If we end up having a show tomorrow, of course, we'll be posting that and how to listen tomorrow. That'll be on our Facebook page, www.facebook.com/thechickenwhisperer. Yesterday at radio show time, I believe it was yesterday. Maybe it was the day before yesterday. I've lost track. But we hit 20,000 fans, and this morning I had just checked, and hang on just a second. Let me answer this little message here. They sound real good. All right, and today I just checked before we came on, and 21,000. So we had just 1,000 fans here in the last couple of days. So, yeah, Trident Farm says she's been or he's been a hippie farmer lately, and it's his season. Working out in the garden. So let's see what we got here. Seeing all what's going in the chat room here. Yeah, it's very lively. Come on and join us. If you're listening live online, then the chat room should have automatically opened up. If you're a guest in there, we encourage you to register either with your Facebook sign-on name or maybe Twitter or even just create one with Blog Talk Radio. Get your own cool chat room, chat name there. No Pat today. Dr. McCray, she called me this morning. She is in the pharmacy saving lives, so and supporting Big Pharma. So she is there in the pharmacy today, so she will not be joining us today. And then tomorrow, like I said, show is questionable. I'll make that decision tonight based on our schedule and if we decide to make the trip that we're going to make the trip to. And so I will post that a little bit later this evening. We got a great prize to give away today. Dr. McCray brings a question or two that she's going to ask for our chicken trivia today. And we've got a really cool prize from critter-cages.com, www.critter-cages.com. We've got a really cool brooder kit. It's retail value, $42.99, I believe. Yeah, there it is, $42.99 from critter-cages.com, and we've got that awesome prize to give away today. And if we have a couple of questions, we might give away a product from our good friends over at maybe some Carefree Enzymes products, some Carefree Enzymes, another one of our awesome sponsors. So we'll see what we have time for today. We got a really cool topic, and in fact, let's go over here to the phone lines, and let's go ahead and get started with our topic. But first, let's go ahead and welcome our good friend. So good to have you back, Dr. Bridget McCray. Hang on, wait for it. Hey, oh, wait, it didn't play. There we go. Had to get the applause in there. Thank you very much. It's so good to have you back.
Hi, it's good to be back. Missed listening to your shows and talking to your listeners in the chat room for a long time there. I wasn't able to log in. Was having troubles here with Blog Talk Radio.
Uh-oh.
But made it in just fine today. I don't know what made today so different from any other days.
Awesome. Well, we're glad that when you can listen, we're glad when you can be a guest as well and share all your wonderful knowledge with all of our listeners. So is school out there yet?
Yes. At the beginning of this month, finals week took place, and everyone who took advanced poultry science passed with an A. It was a great class this year. They got some hands-on experience. They're raising broilers right alongside some Delawares. So they got to raise the broilers up for about 6 weeks and then process them. And they each got to take home 5 broiler chickens for their efforts. And the remaining chickens will be used for our FFA poultry judging contest, the remaining broiler carcasses. And so all the programs here end up benefiting you somehow. We're still raising up the Delawares, though. They're taking their time getting up to about 5 pounds. One of them took a chunk out of my finger this morning, so I can't type very fast on the computer.
Uh-oh.
It's rather unfortunate. Yeah, it was a little surprising. Apparently they can jump a little higher than I thought. All I was doing was standing in the pen and had my hand down at my side, and all of a sudden the chunk's missing out of my finger. Okay, note to self, hands in pockets.
They were like, hey, that looks like a special treat.
Yeah, that was a little surprise. That was my little surprise this morning. I was like, okay. So I got to watch them and make sure they aren't taking chunks out of each other, too.
That's absolutely correct.
Yeah. So, yeah, still raising up those Delawares, gathering some good information on feed consumption and weight gains on a weekly basis so that hopefully we can put some information out there for folks who want to take a heritage breed out to 5-pound market weight and process those chickens.
How much feed it would take and how long it's going to take and all that
information. Yeah,
how long it's
going to take is especially important. And then you can't quite say, you know, how much money goes into it feed-wise because, you know, feed prices fluctuate.
Mm-hmm.
So feed 5 years ago would have been a different price than it is now or 5 years from now even.
Sure.
But if you have the info and you have the ammo, then you can make better decisions.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then you can do more. You can figure if it's going to be worthwhile and you know, what to expect before you get started down that route. And I completely agree.
Yeah. Yep.
Studies are a great tool.
We'd love to do it with some more breeds, but, you know, my class only rolls around once every other year, so we'll just have to wait until we've got some excited students 2 years from now.
There you go. Sounds like a plan. So, big word for today, thermo. Right?
Thermoregulation?
There you go.
Yep. Oh, okay. Sometimes you go in and out, and I'm wondering, uh-oh, it went out halfway through the word.
Yep.
I'll give him a chance to say it.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, no.
So, perfect timing because summer's coming up, and it's going to be hot. It's already quite hot in a lot of places, and as we know, that heat can be very detrimental to chickens, including backyard flocks as well. And so you're here to kind of teach us and tell us all about kind of how chickens keep cool and what we can do to help.
How they regulate their body temperature. So it's not necessarily just about the heat. It's also about the cold.
Okay.
Because if you understand the mechanisms of heat transfer and some of the pathways of heat transfer, it applies on both cold seasons and hot seasons.
Perfect.
And I'm going to start with some information that's general for all birds. So,
okay.
You know, we appreciate our chickens. We love our chickens. But some of your listeners out there, you know, during the course of their day, they may have a bird outside their window that they watch nesting or resting. And, you know, we do pick up on certain behaviors of these birds during different times of the year. And hopefully this will impart just a little bit more of an appreciation for birds in general and their capacity for temperature control. So, number one, this is going to be back and forth between you and me, Andy, okay?
Gotcha.
So don't take off. I've got questions for you.
Uh-oh.
Birds versus, let's say, snakes. What's the big difference there?
Let's see.
Temperature-wise.
Let's see. Warm-blooded, cold-blooded?
Yep. One is a homeotherm, and that means that they can maintain a relatively constant deep body temperature. Birds are also endotherms, which indicates they can increase their deep body temperature by generating a large amount of heat within the tissues instead of relying on heat that they gain from their surroundings. So You know, some of you may be out there in the winter time or in the early spring, and sometimes you'll see snakes in the morning on the road because they're trying to heat up their bodies on that nice warm asphalt that conducts heat from the sun. It gets a little warmer than the surrounding vegetation. So, you know, birds don't necessarily need to go to exposed locations in order to warm up. Now, I say birds, of course. There are thousands of types of birds on planet Earth, and there are exceptions to every rule. So what I'm going to cover is the norm, okay?
Gotcha.
All right. So how, you know, what's the main difference between, like, say, a dog and a chicken just by looking at it? Look
just
at the
by,
skin.
Well, I know that dogs, I don't believe, have sweat glands either, do they? They just pant to try to keep cool, like a chicken would pant to try to keep cool, but they have fur and not feathers.
Feathers, that's the key. Fur versus feathers. Fur doesn't have the same sort of insulation value as plumage does, feathers. Plumage is really very effective insulation. So that is one of the keys that helps poultry or birds in general maintain a constant body temperature. Another thing is fat deposition. Where do we have fat on our bodies versus fat on a bird's body? If you think about it, birds don't have a lot of fat.
Nope.
No, they don't need to insulate their tissues. Of course, there are those birds that are in constant contact with cold surfaces, like, say, water, a.k.a. ducks, geese, certain water birds, seafaring or lake-faring water birds. Of course, they're going to have that layer of fat right underneath the skin because they would otherwise lose deep body temperature to the surrounding water. So they do have a lot more fat underneath the skin than, say, a wren or a sparrow, some other type of bird that you might see in your backyard. So salt glands are another thing that help birds avoid some of the consequences of dehydration that results from evaporative heat loss. If you, next time you go to the beach, I want you to take a good look at that doggone seagull that's trying to snatch whatever it is out of your hand while you're at the beach or steal something from your picnic basket. Don't they always seem to do that? Take a good look at their head. A lot of gulls or other seafaring birds have kind of a tubular shape to their nose. They're called tube noses. And what they do is they have salt glands that, because they're, you know, so involved with the water, of course, salt water, they're going to pick up salt. So why don't they dehydrate faster than anything else? Well, they're specially evolved to it so that they don't lose a whole lot of their water to evaporative heat loss. All right. So let's start talking about deep body temperature. I'm going to give some examples here.
All right.
Domestic goose. What do you think the deep body temperature is in degrees Fahrenheit? Just give a guess.
Like when you take the goose's temperature, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. 104.
You're close. 105.8. Nice. Nice. Let's talk about a similarly sized bird. How about a turkey?
Turkeys. I'm just going to take a wild guess and say it would be less, maybe 102 to 103.
No, go the other direction.
Oh, higher, really? Okay.
Yeah.
I was thinking if a goose is more apt to go hang out in water, that they might have a higher temp. But okay, so 107.4.
Just a little too high, 106.2. Now, how about a pigeon, just a regular old pigeon?
Let's see. I'm going to say, God, you're going higher, but I would think a small bird like that would go lower. So I'll go back down to around 103.
No, 107.9.
Ah, keep going higher and higher. Okay, so maybe
that's
next
a hot
time...
little bird, isn't it?
No kidding. Well, I guess like when I've had parakeets in the past, and you know when they sit on your finger gets so warm. Those of you have had birds like that, and they grab onto your little index finger, and next thing you know, it just starts burning and getting all warm, and because there's so much heat in their feet. And so, okay, so I guess I can see that now that I relate to real life experience. This
and you know the temperature of a chicken, right?
That's why I keep kind of going down, because it's somewhere around 103, isn't it? 103 and a half or
107.
Something like that? 107.
And the duck is 107.7.
See, I've okay, because I know I've looked at that on quite a bit, because when we do chicken trivia, we'll post that. And oftentimes I have to tell people, and I'll say, okay, now just, you know, we'll give this with a degree or two, because depending on what information you find out there, Google, Yahoo, this school, that school.
And hopefully we can kind of clear up some of that today, why there is such a fluctuation or variation. Knowing that I grew up in California, we saw a lot of these in our backyard. What do you think the temperature is for a California quail?
I'm batting about zero now. but you keep going up higher and higher, so let's just say 108.
No, 106.
Okay.
Okay, degrees Fahrenheit, folks. I'm saying all these in degrees Fahrenheit. I just want you to get an idea of whereabouts things are for these different species, and you know, if you take a look at a snapshot or a cross section of the bird species, it's going to be about the same range across species. But one of the things that plays in as a factor when you're analyzing this is what time of day you take the temperature measurement. I know that you're an EMT, Andy, and I'm sure you've been called out at times where you've had to take someone's body temperature just to see where they stand at times. When are you the warmest as a human being?
I was always taught that in the late afternoon and evening, your temperature runs higher than it would be, say, when you first wake up in the morning and throughout the day. So that's just something that we always used. And I said, oh, well, it's, you know, it's 5 p.m. or it's 6 p.m., 7 p.m., something like that, and your temperature seems to be a little bit higher in the evening than it would be in the morning. But, you know, with technology today, you never know. that may have changed.
And it depends on your circadian rhythm. If you... Like, say, what if you had the night shift? If you worked midnight till 6 a.m. or something like that, or 10 till 6 a.m., your circadian rhythm is going to be completely different from someone who works 8 a.m. to 5 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
Because your sleep schedule is going to be different. Your activity schedule is going to be different. So if we talk about birds in the same way, the body temperature, the deep core body temperature of a bird fluctuates during the course of the day. Of course, the bird's body temperature is highest when the bird is most active, so when it's awake. So when do you think an owl's body temperature is most active, Andy? Highest?
At nighttime.
At nighttime. When it starts hunting, at the beginning of the evening, you know, at dusk, and then again in the morning at just before sunrise. And so those nocturnal species have a very different schedule. They're very active, you know, when the light levels change. And so your chickens, of course, are going to be a lot like us. They are daytime-loving birds. And so they're going to be very active in the daylight hours, more so in the afternoon. And I've always found that 4 p.m. is the hottest time of day around here. Don't know about y'all's where you live, but 4 p.m. seems to be the absolute high of the day, and 4 a.m. seems to be the absolute low temperature of the day for us. So your daily cycle of body temperature, if you're a bird or if you're human, is linked to the photoperiod or the light periods. and your circadian rhythm, circa meaning day, and, well, dia meaning day and circa meaning about one. So about a day is what it all adds up to. Also linked to that is your thyroid activity if you're a bird. There is some evidence that changes in body temperature are linked to how well your thyroid works, and I'm not going to go into a whole lot of that because I think there's far more interesting things for us to kind of work into during the course of this little talk today. All right. Let's talk about the environment. Of course, that's going to play a role in the temperature of a bird. High air temperatures equals high body temperatures. And when that occurs, the bird has to use cooling mechanisms. Namely, first, the evaporative cooling mechanism. What happens, what's the first thing that a bird tries to do during cool temperatures, Andy?
Obviously they want to stay warm, so I figure if it's cooler.
What do you do when you go outside on a cool morning?
To try to what? To compensate, to keep warm?
Right.
Of course I'll put on maybe a sweater.
Well, you forgot your sweater.
I forgot my sweater. I'm outside. Okay, then let's see. If I get outside and my hands start getting cold, I'm going to rub them together to try to generate some heat, keep my hands warm, maybe my arms warm.
And it keeps getting colder, see. Andy. What else is going to happen to you?
I'm going to go find out where the sun's shining and go sit in the sun.
But it's just a cold day. What else is your body going to do? Maybe, oh, let's see, New Dawn Farm Girl and Tater Farm got it in the chat room. What'd they say, Andy?
They said shiver.
Exactly.
So I was going to say go back inside. I'll go back inside.
But unfortunately, you're outside because you got locked out. You're going to shiver until you can get warm enough. And that's just a natural way to, for a lot of animals, to increase their heat production, all the way from the extremities down to your deep core body temperature. Let's go back to heat. When you're too hot, and you're not quite, you know, outside, you're outside working, and what's the first indication that you may be overheating? What's the first sensation you may feel, Andy?
Let's see. Going back to my paramedic days, you're going to start sweating, you're going to get lightheaded, you may have nausea, you may have vomiting.
What about the very first sign?
Dizziness, fatigue.
How about just getting thirsty?
Possibly.
That can be it. When it's too hot outside, it can lead to dehydration. And so that's what I was aiming for you to say, although I missed the mark on that one. But oh well. So, of course, you, your dog, your cat, your horse, your chickens, when it gets hot outside, they're going to get thirsty. And you've got to provide fresh, cool, clean water for them. During the hotter parts of the month, which we're about to extend into in the months of June, July, August, and in some places September even, let's talk about heat transfer pathways within the body. The first one we're going to talk about is something called conduction. Now, conduction is just basically heat that travels through the tissues, and that's direct transfer of energy from molecule to molecule. And, you know, that's just how heat transfers. Like if you've got one hand that's cold, for some reason maybe you forgot one of your gloves, you'll put it inside, you know, the other hand to help kind of conduct heat from the warm hand to the cold hand.
Mm-hmm.
There are certain tissues, though, that are better at doing that than others inside the bird's body. Fat is the lowest thermoconductive tissue. And it really has a role of being a barrier to heat flow. And again, it's not really all that much of a big deal in birds as in mammals because birds don't have a substantial layer of fat beneath the skin. But there are strategic locations inside the bird's body where fat is located, inside the abdominal cavity, almost at capacity. I'm used to saying that all the time. But, you know, think about ducks. Right where their bodies come in contact with that water, that's where you're going to see a lot of fat. And heat loss to the water is a considerably greater risk than heat loss to the air. So their backs don't carry a whole lot of fat deposition. Let's talk about the next method of heat transfer, convection. Convection is heat transfer by conduction within the body. And this is most important during cold seasons. This is really important when blood flows through the skin is restricted by cold weather. So the bloodstream is a type of internal convection. The blood acquires heat from heat-producing tissues, conveys it to the skin, and it can be dissipated from the bird that way, or it can even pass through cooler areas and rise the temperature in those areas. And one really kind of cool way that birds do this is something called countercurrent heat exchange. I remember the first time I learned about this when I was in avian biology class. I just thought it was the coolest thing. It's basically when you've got heat transfer between the core and the skin surface, typically in the limbs. So you've got warm blood from the arterioles, so you know they're coming from the heart, from the core, going into the limbs, and some of the venous blood returning from the limb where it's cool, you know, comes in close contact with that arterial blood, and so there's some heat exchange. So there's a fairly even temperature within the limb itself, and you know the blood returning from the limb isn't so cold that it's going to bother the bird. So Andy, can you think of a bird whose limbs might be in, just the limbs, let's say the legs, might be in cold, let's say water, quite a bit?
Oh yeah, a herring possibly, or a penguin, or
heron is exactly it. A lot of those long-legged birds use countercurrent heat exchange.
Mm-hmm.
Storks, herons, egrets. Those birds that sometimes fish in the water have to be standing there, stuck still for hours. And you'll see them out there even in the winter. Why aren't their legs frozen off? Well, it's because of countercurrent heat exchange. They've developed this system so that the blood flow and the oxygen supply to those distant parts of their extremities can be maintained without losing tremendous amounts of heat to that water.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, have a little respect for that bird out there in the middle of winter that's still out there fishing, and it's 30 degrees. It can hack it. Okay. Something else we're going to talk about is cold vasodilation. And that's basically how you curtail heat transfer from deep tissues to the extremities. There are times when countercurrent heat exchange needs to be turned off, or there are certain parts of the body where it just doesn't apply. And the risk here is freezing, and when we talk about this in the winter, we're often talking about what, Andy?
By the way, I just found I posted on the. If you're following the chat room, I'd posted on why this show is so important and listening to the experts is that I'd posted. I found two websites immediately where it talked about internal chicken temperatures. One had posted on their website 102 to 103, and one was 106 to 107. So I was like, okay, so yeah, get the information here.
I'll get more detail on chickens in just a moment.
Nope, that'll be fine. So, okay, what do you want from me now?
When you're thinking about cold,
yep,
and the risk of freezing, what body parts do we usually think of in the chicken?
Oh, well, we think about the comb. Mm-hmm. When people are get cold, they think about, ooh, frostbitten comb. We think about the toes and the feet.
Or the waddles.
The waddles
can
absolutely
freeze too.
The fleshy part that isn't covered by a multitude of feathers.
Yep. So these are areas where if the environmental temperature is low enough and the bird is trying to restrict blood flow to those areas, you can get risk of frostbite or damage to those tissues, and that's called cold vasodilation. Okay. It's hard to think of that during this time of year. So let's go back to heat loss, okay? There's something called sensible heat loss. It's a way of losing heat without it evaporating, because, again, we're not talking about a species that sweats necessarily. Radiation, heat that is in the form of electromagnetic waves, and that's transferred to the body surfaces into the environment if the environment is lower than the temperature of the skin. Have you ever walked into a room and stood next to somebody and it just seems like heat is radiating off of them? They're operating at a high body temperature, whether they just worked out or they just came in from another room that was hotter or maybe from outside. So
maybe the young lady shouldn't really be all been out of shape when a guy says, "You are hot." Maybe it's just because they're at a dinner party and they're standing there and they can feel that radiant heat coming off and they're literally...
She's making a comment on her radiant heat loss. That's it. That's all. She just needs to think of it that way.
Absolutely.
She can just sit around and say, "Thank you for commenting on my radiant heat loss."
Exactly. There you go, ladies. You heard it here first.
So that really applies when the temperature of the bird is higher than the surrounding air temperature. So let's talk about convection. Heat loss by convection involves actual movement of molecules of the air. So the air is in contact with the skin. Then that air warms up. It becomes less dense and rises. Okay? That's how we cool down, through convection. That's why we like air conditioning. That's why heat rises and cold descends. So air
That's why I have tall ceilings in my home that was built in 1900 before electricity and air conditioning, because heat rises. The tall ceilings in the hot summers of South Georgia, the heat would rise to the top part of the room and be a little bit cooler in the lower part of the room, but
right.
It's still hot as Hades. I can tell
you need
you
to
right
lay on
now.
The floor.
No kidding. Get under the house for that matter.
So if the bird is exposed to moving air, then you're actually very quickly speeding up that process. And then more heat may be lost to the surroundings by convection. That's why we put out fans or we yearn for windy days where the chickens or ourselves in some circumstances can really kind of pick convection into play. Respiration is another way for heat loss to occur. Again, poultry don't have sweat glands. Non-evaporative heat loss is the warming of air that you take into the body and having it come in contact with the upper respiratory tract. So that's non-evaporative heat loss. So the air that comes in through the nose and the mouth is warmed up by coming in contact with the tissues of the upper respiratory tract. Convection and conduction both come into play there. But don't forget feathers. There's another thing to come into play here, plumage. It's a good barrier to heat loss, but when it's hot outside, you'll see chickens kind of look twice their normal size. They're going to fluff up a little bit. They're trying to lift up their feathers so that more air can circulate around those feathers. And other birds do this too. Sometimes you'll see seabirds lift the feathers right over their scapulas, and they're trying to get air in there, or they'll hold their wings away from their body to get some air circulating through there. In the winter, you'll see this too, because the down feathers trap air where there's little convective movement. And the down feathers will help birds stay a little bit warmer by trapping air. In the winter, the contour feathers are more for wind protection. If it's a really windy day, they can kind of help protect from a little bit of wind burned on the bird. So when a bird lifts up its feathers in the middle of summer and is kind of behaving like it's cold in the middle of summer, that's not necessarily normal. That's probably a sign of illness. So coming with changes in plumage movement are certain behaviors that can indicate whether or not a bird is feeling well. If a bird is completely slicked down in the middle of winter, something's going on there. That's the bird's not feeling right. Its body temperature is too high. If everybody else is all kind of tucked in and fluffed together, but somebody else isn't, either they're operating at a high body temperature or they could be ill because their body temperature's gone up. So behavior comes into play with this. So as we all know, in the middle of winter, birds will kind of pull their legs in, pull their necks in, not want to move around much. They're using the insulation value of their feathers.
Mm-hmm.
And, they're going to not move a whole lot. Interestingly, some bird species will change how much plumage they put on depending on the season. Some of the smaller birds, like, say, sparrows, the actually weight of their plumage will go up by 30% or down by 30%, whether it's winter or summer. And so certain species can actually do that. And, of course, these may be species that change their appearance depending on breeding season, which does tie into photoperiod and season. So, there are some species out there that can really change their appearance and change the number of feathers, the weight of the feathers, that they put on and carry around with them.
Is there any analysis, because I was thinking about it, which means there's probably another listener out there thinking about it, when a lot of times in late summer, early fall, when the chickens go through a molt, is there any correlation there with winter coming up as far as getting more feathers or newer feathers, or the newer feathers would be more insulating, or, would they have more feathers coming through wintertime?
Not necessarily more feathers, but if you're going into a tough season, you're going to kind of want to prepare yourself. And putting on a new set of feathers or clothing, if you want to say chicken clothing, if you're going to go into a real tough season, you want the best set of clothes on that you can, that your body can muster. So the best time of year to do that is in the fall, so that you've got a fresh set of duds that'll keep you warm through the worst of winter. And, of course, that's also a negative for parasites. Parasites will do damage to plumage and affect its ability to keep birds warm. And, of course, that affects the overall appearance of the bird and the overall health of the bird. So anything that can bother a bird to the point where they're dropping feathers or pulling their feathers out, not good in the wintertime. So, and this year, let me tell you, this year in this region, we've had a really rough time with mites, northern fowl mites. A lot of the birds that normally would have migrated, I suspect, stayed pretty close to a lot of the poultry small flock farmers and were transferring some of their problem parasites to small flock owners because the food was free. So they were visiting the feeders quite regularly and dropping their problem organisms onto small flocks. And, boy, talk about difficulties this year. A lot of people were losing a lot of birds and losing a lot to a lot of body weight to anemia. So, you know, even if we have a mild winter, you've always got to pay attention to biosecurity. It does eventually come into play. So for those of you who may live near, I should mention, do you need to go to commercial break now? Or?
We've got about 10 more minutes. We'll go at 1 o'clock.
Okay. Of course, chickens pant. They don't sweat. They pant. And, you know, that's a certain process and procedure that uses a large portion of the body to generate airflow. So that they do lose moisture and heat to the environment. And we'll get into that a little bit more specifically with chickens. But something you may see other birds doing is something that really looks more like panting than what chickens do. It's called gular fluttering. A bird that has a very large gular pouch is the pelican. And when they're really hot, they're going to flutter that part of their throat or their neck just below the beak, the lower beak. Yes, it is evaporative heat loss. It is linked to increasing breaths through the system, but what they're doing is vibrating the floor of their mouth and flexing their tongue area. It's, you know, the hyoid bone that exists within our tongues. They have one too. And they're going to increase their blood flow to that area so that they can take advantage of the increased airflow in that specific small area. One of the benefits is it takes less muscles to cause that area of the mouth to flutter. So if you're talking about the cost of that much muscle movement, it's pretty low. So you'll see a lot of birds that can do it will do that, and it avoids the danger of hyperventilation because you're just pushing air over that small surface area to get rid of heat loss. Behaviors. Let's talk a little bit about some of the behaviors. Some of the obvious things, birds will hunt for shade. They may dig down a few inches into the ground to reach the cooler earth. Maybe sometimes taking advantage of a dust bath at the same time, because it does cause them to lift up their feathers, which allows some of that air to come in contact with the skin. They'll orient their backs to the sun. They'll place their feet or even their throat area into the shade of the body. So they'll put their head down so it's more in the shade of their bodies. The wings are held away from the sides of the body. The scapular feathers can be raised up. And the scapular feathers are kind of right at where the bird's shoulders are on the wings, if you think about that part of the body. And that helps with convective heat loss. Some birds will actually defecate on their legs to help with evaporative heat loss. Now, chickens don't do that. They're a little more socially acceptable. They'll splash water over their comb and wattles. And that's a nice way for them to you know, it's a lot more beneficial because nobody wants to pick up a bird that's done some business all over its legs. Chickens will hunch in cold environments. If you look at how they try to keep heat into their bodies, they can reduce heat loss by 12% by tucking their head under their wings. If a chicken chooses to sit during cold weather, it can reduce heat loss from unfeathered legs and feet by 20 to 50% versus standing. So there has been research done to kind of analyze why certain behaviors, you know, in certain environmental conditions occur. And so now you understand why a hunched up chicken in the corner or a roosting chicken with its head under its wing is far better off than a chicken that can't fit its entire head under its wing, or it's got most of its comb hanging out. It's not going to be as efficient as other birds or other breeds.
The million-dollar question is, can a rooster tuck its head under the wing?
Yes, usually male birds have a larger comb, and depending on the breed, can it do it?
Okay.
So if you say a breed was, say, a pea comb, not going to be a problem, mm-hmm, or a cushion comb, not so much. Breeds that have single combs or exceedingly large rose combs, or even, like, say, a buttercup comb, they're going to have a harder time. It's just part of the design. But some, not all, some of those breeds were developed in areas of the country that have very mild winters, so it
mm-hmm
never was going to come into play.
Mm-hmm.
Like, say, the Sicilian buttercup. It's rather warm on Sicily. And, you know, if that bird were to move to Alaska, I think it's going to have some problems. It's not been designed for that living condition. And therefore, you have to compensate for it in your coop design. Cold environments, we'll go through this little bit, and then I'll stop, and then you can go to your your break, and then we'll focus on chickens. We'll move away from general birds and focus on chickens. Sometimes when chickens are exposed to cold environments, shivering can be detected before the deep body temperature changes. So that's your first hint. If you see a chicken shivering, there, you know, it may not be so detrimental that you have to warm them up immediately. That's perhaps just the first sign that, okay, maybe tomorrow, because I know the temperature is going to be colder tomorrow, maybe I need to insulate, or, maybe I need to do another step, because if they're all shivering, they're all having a hard time. Interestingly, cold receptors for birds in general, the only known ones are actually in the beak. And that's, you know, operated by the trigeminal nerve. Now, they're not quite sure if there are some others. There are questions out there. I'm sure this is an area where further research can be done, but we definitely know that peripheral cold receptors are in the beak. And where does that come into play in the middle of winter, Andy?
Hmm.
It has to do with water.
Put me on the spot here.
I did. Frozen waters.
Not good.
Not good. Chickens have a hard time with really, really, really cold water, and they aren't going to want to break through frozen waters. So, like I said, this has to do with hot weather, and it has to do with cold weather.
Sometimes they can't break through it. They'll be
standing
on top of the ice block that used to be their water, pooping on it.
Yes. Now, what about those baby chicks? You said you just did a hatching and incubation session. Think about that newly hatched baby chick, you know? It's just out of the egg. What's going to happen to the body temperature of that chick?
Oh, it's out of the egg. So now we've got air temperature we're dealing with, and its temperature, I would say, was probably going to drop a little bit because it's been self-contained in that egg. It's had some insulation there, and now it's in this big open room.
And they're usually dry when they come out?
Nope. They're nice and soaking wet until they actually do dry out and become nice and fluffy.
And so there is some evaporative cooling that occurs there. So that's why a lot of people, when a chick first hatches out, I tell them put it right back into the incubator. Don't fool around with it. Let it warm up inside there because, you know, it's going to need the temperature as well as the airflow. The airflow is the negative here. It's going to need the temperatures associated with that incubator to really kind of help it raise its body temperature. So, you know, the feathers are wet, they start to dry out, then the body temperature can kind of rise up. And it actually takes about 3 weeks for a chick to really reach adult body temperature, depending on what it's doing, of course. So that's really why we want people to raise the temperature in the brooder, because those little chicks can't quite reach that adult body temperature yet. They're still, although they're pretty efficient, they're still thermoregulating a bit. Now, chickens are a precocial species, and like, say, parrots or sparrows are altricial species. Altricial species don't have as many feathers, and they're not as able to thermoregulate as, say, a baby chick, which is a precocial species. So they are rather capable, but not perfect. That's why we have to provide supplemental heat, especially in the beginning of their lives, so that they can find food, find water, and be overall quite happy. And I'll turn it back over to you so that you can go to commercial, and then
That's
we'll
fine.
Talk specifically about chickens.
Okay. And like I said, the baby chicks, even at that age, you still very smart, still know what they're feeling, because, as you know, we like to give them enough room in the brooder to self-regulate. So if they are cold, mm-hmm. they can move closer to the heat. If they're maybe that one particular chicken, like me, is always hot and, of course, needs to be away from the heat, you've got the space so they can self-regulate based on their each individual comfort level, because just like with humans, I might like it at 72, Jen might like it at 78, and I'll be freezing her out sometimes, as I'm warm-natured, and she is not. So perfect. We see that with our baby chicks, too. All righty. Well, great information. We're going to go to a commercial break here. When we come back, we'll be more specific to chickens, and we've got some great prizes to give away. We've got a brooder kit from these folks right here. Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com. It's easy and rewarding to keep backyard chickens, and My Pet Chicken can supply everything you need to get started, including baby chicks, chicken coops, accessories, books, and free how-to information, plus fun gifts and rooster decor. At My Pet Chicken, you can buy as few as 3 baby chicks. They also sell fertile hatching eggs. Visit them online at mypetchicken.com. That's mypetchicken.com. Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing. Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle.
Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Stromberg's has been a family-owned and operated business, providing quality poultry and poultry supplies to their customers. Today, the Stromberg family offers over 200 different breeds of poultry, including chickens, waterfowl, and game birds. They also offer poultry supplies for the beginner or advanced poultry keeper. Stromberg should be on the top of your list when it comes time to order. Shop online at www.strombergschickens.com or call today at 1-800-720-1134. Remember, that's strombergschickens.com.
This looks like a job for
Super Chicken.
You get the super sauce, I'll don my super suit.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. We are talking to poultry scientist Dr. Bridget McCrae, PhD, about all kinds of cool stuff about chickens, including thermo. Can you say it, everybody? Can you say it? Thermoregulation is today's topic, and we're talking all about really all different types of birds and how they keep cool. But we are also going to specifically talk about chickens. Let me bring Dr. McCrae back live here, and there we go. You are back live with us, Dr. McCrae. Thank you very much for joining us, and we can continue covering this. And then when you're ready to take a little break, we can do the chicken at trivia question for today.
Ah, yes. Okay. Well, when we talk about keeping chickens cool or warm and comfortable, we're often talking about their housing conditions. And we're talking about the thermoneutral zone. Now, I'm not talking about, you know, something out of Star Trek or something like that. We're talking about where the chickens can be housed and cared for so that those conditions can provide them with thermal balance. And we've talked quite a bit about where the body temperature of the chicken is. Internal body temperature for the adult chicken varies somewhere between 105 and 107, and there are 9 different factors that influence these numbers, whether it's down at 105 or up to 107. Number one, the age of the bird. The body temperature of a newly hatched chick is about 103.5 degrees Fahrenheit, and it will increase daily until the bird is, you know, about 3 weeks old and can achieve a stable body temperature. Oh, I hear Caleb.
Yeah, he's waking up from a nap.
For those of you out there who have some bantam chicken breeds, you may be interested in knowing that with small breeds, your chickens have a higher body temperature than ye with large breeds. So everybody out there who has your bantam Old English game hens, you may have figured this out long ago, that when you're holding her versus when you're holding your, I don't know, your Rhode Island white hen, the hand holding that bantam is probably going to be just a little bit warmer, just a tad. The male chickens have a slightly higher body temperature than female chickens, and this is probably due to larger muscle mass and a slightly higher metabolic rate. Activity is a huge factor. Your chickens that you just spent 20 minutes chasing around the yard because you couldn't catch them are going to have a higher body temperature than the chickens that you just plucked off of the roost at 3 a.m. and they were asleep for hours. Okay? So birds kept in cages have a lower body temperature than birds that move more. Okay? Molting birds tend to increase their body temperature because they're molting. They're going to be trying to compensate for that plumage loss. Broody hens, of course, have a higher body temperature. Mm-hmm. And why do you think that is, Andy?
Got to hatch them eggs.
Yep. They're giving up some of that body heat to those lovely eggs sitting right underneath them. So broody hens have a higher body temperature than non-broody hens. So that broody buckeye that you have sitting off to the side there is going to have a higher body temperature than that oh-so non-broody single-comb white leghorn or buff Catalana or whatever it is you have that tends to be a non-broody breed. Body temperature increases after eating. So as soon as food enters the digestive tract and digestion begins, you'll see an increase in body temperature. Okay. So that's great in the winter, but it also translates to not much food consumption in the hottest of the mm-hmm. summer months because mm-hmm. mm-hmm. they're trying to shed heat, not create it.
And water consumption will go up.
Yes, yes. We'll get to that. Body temperature of chicken is also higher during periods of increased light intensity than during periods of less light intensity or darkness. So, you know, some commercial conditions so that the birds do not mature too soon, they will slowly ramp up the hours of light and the intensity of light. And there is a corresponding change in body temperature of the birds. And there is a tendency for the core body temperature to rise as the ambient temperature goes above or below the thermoneutral zone, okay? So, you know, heat is gained, heat is lost. You know, we've talked about radiation, we've talked about conduction and convection. But other ways for heat to be transferred is fecal excretion. There is, of course, a small amount of heat loss each time the bird defecates. And so, you know, each time birds increase their water consumption associated with hot weather, you know, there is a little bit of heat loss when they defecate. Egg production.
Mm-hmm.
There is loss of heat with the laying of an egg. It is minimal, it's minor, but eggs kind of act as a heat sink. And who hasn't reached inside the chicken coop and felt a freshly laid warm egg?
Oh, yeah.
It often surprises people how warm that egg is. So she just lost quite a bit of volume there, and associated with it is some heat. And, of course, latent heat is when you change water from a solid to a liquid or from a liquid to a gas without changing the temperature. There's some, you know, damp lining inside the respiratory tract and the air sacs that, you know, there's evaporative cooling through that process. Now, a lot of people ask me, you know, I'm not sure why my birds died this summer. Was it because they were sick or was it because of the heat? Well, you know, check the body temperature of the bird as soon as you find it and see if that deep core body temperature has risen up to or past the lethal temperature, which is 116.8 degrees Fahrenheit. And that's called heat prostration. That's the critical point that birds will die. So, You know, that's why I tell people, take the time to put a fan out there. Last summer was so bad here and elsewhere, I know, that a lot of people were losing birds just because they could not cool themselves down at all. That ties into the facilities that you are able to provide your birds. Panting becomes necessary at high temperatures. When heat cannot be dissipated from the body by radiation, by conduction, or by convection, they have to try evaporative cooling. And that's where panting comes into play. Heat's removed from the body by the incoming air itself. And as the heat loss that occurs when the water is evaporated from the respiratory tract, you know, then the birds can cool down. But at a humidity of about 50%, birds will begin panting when the temperature reaches about 85 degrees Fahrenheit. Panting, of course, comes with it dehydration. And I think, Andy, you have a question for me after I finish talking about this little piece.
Sure.
The increase in the respiration rate also means that there's a loss of moisture from the body. And to compensate for this, birds will drink more to avoid dehydrating. And the more they drink, the more water that can be exhaled, and the surplus moisture is defecated in the droppings. The amount of moisture in the ambient air or the humidity also affects the panting rate. So those of you who live in areas of the world that are closer to the equator, warmer areas, you probably have a higher humidity unless you're in some desert regions. And therefore, the more rapid is respiration or panting. So, Andy, why don't you go ahead and hit me with that question you were going to ask?
All righty, perfect. When you go to the feed stores, everybody who's listening in the chat room has experienced this. Many have used it, and you'll go and you'll see a little a packet of powder called vitamins and electrolytes. And ManaPro has a product out as well called Life Lights, and it kind of solved the problem of having to mix that packet in 300 gallons of water for your six chickens. And so they just have this neat container. You put 1, 2, 3, 4 tablets in based on how many gallons of water you're going to mix it in. You pour it in your water, and then they drink it. So many refer to that as kind of like a Gatorade and a multivitamin for your chickens, which can help with some of the heat stress in the hotter months like June, July, and August here in the South. And then it's also sometimes recommended that you give it and then give fresh water and then give it and then give fresh water, kind of alternate that back and forth. But, again, the fact that it helps a little bit with the stress that comes along with the heat. And so my question for you is, for the average backyarder who has 12 chickens and it's constantly, let's say they're having a heat run of, you know, 92 to 100 degrees for the next 2 weeks, they want to maintain good egg laying, they want to keep the heat stress down from their chickens, should I go and spend $7.95 on this product to give to my hens in the backyard?
Well, you're going to be better off buying a product that is labeled as vitamin and electrolytes over trying to mix something yourself. I know some people who break it down to, well, isn't it just have to do with salt? So why don't I just mix up a salt solution in the water? No. You
right.
want vitamins and electrolytes, which are just that much more different. In the times of extreme heat, when you know that there's not going to be much relief, you are unable to keep it right at about 70 degrees wherever it is, they're going to be heat stressed. You can't necessarily prevent heat prostration by using vitamins and electrolytes, but it does help. If you're using these birds as, like, say, a hatching flock, like you're producing hatching eggs, you're going to want those vitamins and electrolytes in the water anyhow to help improvements in hatchability or even fertility for your breeding flock. So, yes, there are times when it is appropriate and you may want to invest in those particular items. Not knowing ManaPro's product specifically, there are times when vitamins and electrolytes are perfectly fine.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you buy it as the powdered package and you have to only add, you
right.
know, an eighth of a teaspoon, or if it's pill by pill, like it sounds like this ManaPro product is, it would work fine. And now let's talk about areas of the country that experience high temperatures and high humidity, where you are, Andy. Doesn't matter what age the chicken is, they can't withstand the combination of high temperature and high humidity. If the surrounding air is moist, it can't absorb as much moisture from the respiratory tract. So therefore, the bird must pant more rapidly, right?
Correct.
And so if you can dehumidify the air at all, of course, the birds are going to be more comfortable. Not practical in most coops. But that's why you'll see a lot of these commercial houses will start running more of their fans. They'll also initiate the use of their pad and fan system, their cooling pads at one end of the house. And so if you're going to put chickens inside a region of the country and raise them in a region of the country that has both high temperature and high humidity, you must have a good enough design so that they don't suffer from the high temperature, high humidity combination. So those of you who may have young people out there interested in the sciences, engineering is certainly an area for poultry production as well as other livestock production. Engineering, agricultural engineering, is a field that is still open for further development, although I would say it's always interesting to see different designs and different elements used for different fans or pad and fan systems inside broiler houses. So that's why you'll see those birds, there aren't any, in certain regions, there aren't any windows because they're solely relying upon backup generators and the pad and fan system. And mm-hmm. I have walked into those houses and just been like, why was I outside? I need to be in here. It's nice in here. And then there have been other times in different regions of the country with different housing styles where you're like, oh, put the curtains down. It's stifling in here. And so engineering continues to change, and coop systems and housing systems continue to change. As I said before, chickens tend to eat less when it's hot. And chickens that eat less lay fewer eggs, lay smaller eggs, or they may not grow as well. So they've got to be kept at a temperature as close to thermoneutral as possible so that you can maximize production. So if you're raising 500 laying hens because you've got a new business, you're going to pay very close attention to the temperatures outside and how comfortable you can keep your birds so that you don't lose your shirt on productivity. Normal ambient temperature and relative humidity of about 70 degrees Fahrenheit and 60% relative humidity. In a 4-pound chicken, those temperature conditions, the amount of moisture loss will equal approximately... I'm going about this all wrong. Okay, let's try this again. The amount of moisture lost for that bird will equal the amount of moisture lost in the feces. But when your body weight goes down, the proportion of water excreted in the feces goes up. So you've got a 4-pound chicken. That's about the size of what? A single comb white leghorn? At normal conditions, you know, they're going to have an equal amount of moisture lost through the respiratory system and the fecal system in their feces. You okay. lower the body weight, the proportion of water that's excreted in the feces goes up. So your little bantam is actually losing a bit more water in their feces than through their respiratory tract. Now, larger bird, like say, I don't know, a Jersey Giant hen, they're going to have less fecal water loss than that 4-pound bird. And I think I'm going to end on this point because I know we're running out of time and you have to do your questions still.
Okay.
Feed and water consumption does affect water production. I think I've said this more than enough times over the past couple of years. A chicken will normally consume 2 times as much water by weight as feed. But as the ambient temperature increases, feed consumption decreases while water intake goes up. An example is broiler chickens. Water consumption increases by approximately 4% for each 1 degree above 70 degrees Fahrenheit. Okay? So, you know, we do know a great deal about how to keep chickens comfortable, keep them growing at a constant rate so that people don't lose their shirts on their small enterprises. So I think I'll leave you with that fact. And did any questions pop up during my my talk today inside the chat room?
No,
I wasn't really watching that.
That's good. They went kind of off and went crazy down a different topic that didn't have to do much with the heating and cooling of your chickens, which often it does in the chat room, depending on who's in there and what kind of topic they have. But we've got an awesome question for today, trivia question. I'm going to go ahead and give everybody the call-in number. Write it down, put it on a sticky note, put it on your little CW notepad. And that you take notes on, 347-637-3237. That's 347-637-3237. And I'm going to get over here and read the question today, which many may have to Google, including myself. So, you know, people, when I say, oh, Dr. McRae is going to have today's trivia question, they're like, well, guess I won't be winning a prize today. Oh, my goodness. Okay, here we go. And we'll take caller number. I don't know if a lot of folks are going to know this without maybe Googling it, so we'll just take a low number like 5. So caller number 5 at 347-637-3237. We've got an awesome prize today from our good friends Critter-Cages.com. It's a complete brooder kit, water, feeder, heat lamp, heat bulb, corral, the whole nine yards. And definitely a great prize valued at about $43 plus shipping to your front door. So here's the question, call number 5. Give the breed and variety for the breed otherwise known as the Fowl of Seville, like just like a Cadillac. Okay, I wanted to pronounce that.
The
just want to make sure.
Fowl of Seville.
Fowl of Seville. So give the breed and variety for the breed otherwise known as the Fowl of Seville, not necessarily a sedan de ville, though we are talking about Volvos in the chat room, so might as well keep it car-related here for a second. So give the breed and variety for the breed otherwise known as the Fowl of Seville. 347-637-3237. Give us a call now if you'd like to win that awesome brooder kit. We're going to have to give them some time, Dr. McRae, because I'm sure they're going to have to go over to, and Google that. So,
well, if anybody out there is a 4-H'er and has been studying their breeds, varieties, and strains section, they ought to know this one.
Yep. You know, I've still, in fact, the other day I was like, as soon as I got done with this chore, by golly, I'm going inside, I'm sitting down at the laptop, and I'm going to order the 4-H avian bull book. And, of course, I've said that about 16 times, and then, of course, for some reason I get sidetracked. I guess having a year old, almost a year old, kind of does that to you. So, yesterday I was sitting there rocking him, and he just happens to assist me in spilling a little bag of what is it? Type Jen, is a honey nut Chex Mix? Is that what you get? Oh my gosh, yes, all over the carpet.
Well, that's okay. You said he was good at picking stuff up off the carpet.
It is, definitely. I'm thinking he probably spilled it just so he'd have a reason to get down on the carpet and then pick it all up and put it in his mouth. I mean, that's just kind of, at that age, it's like, okay, what, I mean, like we talked about earlier, Dr. McRae, it's like, okay, if Dyson has nothing on a 11-month-old, absolutely nothing at all, if they could somehow get 1-year-old hands and little fingers on the inside, on the very front side of that vacuum cleaner, there would be absolutely nothing left in your carpet at all. I can vacuum for 10 minutes in one room, and then, okay, come on, nice and clean. And then 5 seconds later, he's picking something up out of the carpet, and it's, of course, heading right for his mouth. No. So, yeah, if they could somehow simulate a little toddler's hands and fingers on the front of a vacuum cleaner, they could make millions and millions of dollars. So,
there you go. Engineering.
Dead air in the chat room. And so they, let me just kind of tell them what they need to do. Refresh, my friends. Refresh. Of course, it helps to spell it right. But I think they get the thing.
I think Linda Kruger Moore really wants you to pick her number.
That's what she says, but she has to be caller number 5. Let me get over here to the switchboard, and let me refresh the switchboard. So if there's anybody out there in la-la Google land that it's not showing me some. Taking its sweet time today.
My
I noticed
goodness.
That commercials
we broke
too.
Your system.
I would press the commercial play, and it would take about 7 seconds to play. So I had to get creative, and about 7 seconds before the commercial end, I'd have to press the button for the commercial to play to try to get it to sound different. Okay, here we go. It's uploading. Weird. Yeah, we got definitely something going on with. Well, I'm actually on Firefox. I'm going to try this again. Because this is really not cooperating. What are you doing over there, Jen?
Unplugging everything.
Videos or something? My goodness gracious. Oh, man. Okay. Okay, here we go. Button popped back up. So I'm going to try this one more time. I see a lot of callers in queue, so bear with us. I'm just trying to get the... board to come back up. It was all distorted here for a second. I'm trying to just refresh on my end. Maybe a Blog Talk Radio issue, because some people lost sound, some people went blank. Here, I mean, I can see the callers, but I'm trying to just refresh to see if there are any callers out there in La La Land, and it's taking a little time. So let's see. So we've got. Let's see. You'll be back joining us. Let me get over here to the calendar. In June.
In the beginning of June. Yep.
June 7th, and I think that is on go for us. I think
that's a Q&A session. So people, if you've been thinking of questions to ask, save them up for our Q&A session in the beginning of June. We'll take all kinds of questions that you may have out there.
Okay. Let's go to caller number 5 and see if they know the answer. It popped back up here, no problem. Still a few things are loading on the screen, but I've got my switchboard back up. So let me click this button and go to caller number 5 here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Go, Andy, go.
Well, it's rotating here. It'll bring them up here in just a second. Now, there we go. Okay. Area code 336. So hopefully you're live on the air with Dr. McCray and the Chicken Whisperer. Go ahead and state your name. Tell us where you're calling from.
Hey, Andy. It's Jesse from North Carolina.
Jesse in North Carolina. And let me get back over. Well, actually, I don't need to know the answer because Dr. McCray knows the answer. So what do you think the answer to the question is?
Is it the white face, black Spanish?
Exactly. Congratulations.
Yeah.
That's
right.
Great. I thought I had a real stumper out there. Kudos to you.
Thank you.
We had less than 10 people call, so it was a stumper. I guess, versus the other, you know, normally we'll get up there around 20, 25 callers for a contest, and that was less than 10, but we had at least 5, so that panned out okay for Jesse. So congratulations, Jesse. You've won that awesome brooder kit from critter-cages.com valued at $43 plus shipping to your front door. So you just need to send me that email, chickenwhisperer@chickenwhisperer.net, chickenwhisperer@chickenwhisperer.net, and put a brooder winner in the subject line and the name, address, phone number, and email in the email itself, and I'll get that over to Carl at Critter Cages, and they'll get that shipped out to you probably early next week, and we hope you enjoy it, and we thank you for listening and participating. So that's going to wrap up another show. So let me say to Dr. McRae, thank you very much for joining us today. Great topic, a lot of interesting information, things that make you go, And,
exactly.
Nobody's going to look outside their window and see a sparrow the same way anymore.
No, you won't.
And nobody in the chat room is going to basically look at a Volvo the same way either when they're driving down the road. So I'm going to show you of that. So with
nice.
That, thank you very much for tuning in today, as always. And we'll see you, I guess, July 7th is your next roundup. So have a great one. Thank you so much.
Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye. All righty. You can find her Facebook page. It's the Center for Small Flock and Research and Development on Facebook. Look that up. She has daily trivia questions there as well. And go over there. I may actually post that on our Facebook page a little later. So we hope you all have a wonderful and fabulous day. Not sure. Follow me on Facebook. I'll let you know tomorrow if we end up having a show or not. More than likely not. If I had to say right now, I'd say about a 75% chance no show tomorrow, 25% chance there will be a show. Hate to leave you hanging, but I'll be posting that on our Facebook later today. If not, then y'all have a wonderful and fabulous and joyful weekend with your family and friends. We will return on Monday with Peter Brown, another episode of Ask the Chicken Doctor with Peter Brown, and that'll be coming up this Monday. And, of course, we'll be seeing you on Facebook off and on over the weekend. May give some of those prizes we were going to give away on Friday. Give those away over the weekend. And so maybe you'll be lucky on Facebook as we do some Facebook fan contests. So if not tomorrow, then Monday. And we hope you all have an absolutely wonderful and blessed weekend. And take care of those Volvos, folks. We'll see you on Monday. Ha ha.